Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, February 20th, 2010. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for today is why killing the NASA manned space program is an impeachable offense. Now, we refer, of course, to the newly announced budget for next year by the Obama administration. This was put out February 1st, which, among many other things, cut out the manned space program Constellation project, and also it's part of a plan. This is a part of the craziness that there should be privatized space exploration. So this act in itself makes President Obama impeachable. And our two guests will be discussing many aspects of this. But it comes on top of what's been happening throughout the year of President Obama's administration and the behavioralist nest at the White House, the way they're pushing for programs like the Nazi medicine called healthcare reform, the way they're pushing for subversion of the economy, agriculture, financial ruination, and doing it on the part of foreign interests, namely the British Empire, neo-British Empire money interests. But our focus today is going to be on specifically space and how it is as a mission of mankind and a defining commitment of our nation. Now, let me point out right here that a couple days after this February 1st announcement of the cutting of the manned space program of NASA, on February 3rd, Linda LaRouche put out a statement that we need, that this is impeachable. And this is our editorial in our latest February 19th issue of EIR. It's EIR Online. And the specific statement by LaRouche was that President Barack Obama's stated intention to shut down and destroy the NASA program at its root, when added to the Hitler-like healthcare policy and the general destructive features of all other leading Obama policies, is one step too far to bear. There is no longer room on this planet for a United States and a President Obama to occupy the same space. The need for Obama's ouster, either by resignation or impeachment, is now an existential issue for both our republic and the welfare of the planet generally. Now, here to discuss this, I'm very glad to welcome from the LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouche Youth Movement, Ouyang Teng. Welcome, Ouyang.
Hello, thank you.
And he's here near Washington, D.C., and very active with the, you could call it the basement research team with LPAC editorial. And in particular, Ouyang was part of the team that put out, and the narrator, I believe, the February 7th special LPAC TV feature, which was called From the Moon to Mars, The New Economics. This is actually part two. Last August, Ouyang and team put out part one by the same name, From the Moon to Mars, The New Economics. And we will get to that very shortly, but I want to welcome from Washington, D.C., which is really the belly of the beast on all this, Rick Lopez. Hi.
Hey, hello.
Who is part of the LaRouche Youth Movement LPAC operation in Washington, D.C. And I know he's crossing paths with some of the major principals that are involved in the this subversion of NASA and the country. Now, the thing is, Ouyang, why don't you start out with discussing the impeachability from the point of view of how vital it is for manned space, for the space exploration as our vision.
Yeah, I mean, first thing, there's some obvious features which are the things that are kind of on the face of, of the statement that Lynn put out on, that LaRouche put out on the necessity for impeachment. There's what you have as a kind of a blatant assault. You know, it wasn't really sort of a slipped in the back door. I mean, they made the point. I think it was Peter Orszag, who's the head of the Office of Management Office of Management and Budget, who made the point that this is one thing that's non-negotiable. It's almost as if they made a special point of rubbing it in that this is a part of their program, and it seems to me so that what they're calling for is despite what they say, I mean they're lying about their intent, but what they're saying is we're going to get rid of man space because supposedly it costs too much, which is a lie. But I think more important is the mindset behind it and the intention behind it, especially as LaRouche pointed out in that statement, when it's read in the context of everything else that they've done and the mindset that's expressed as far as programmatic policy, that we live in an age where everything is limited, we've reached all of our, we've reached the limit, and so, the task of the government is going to be to dictate who lives and who dies, who has access to the limited resources that they are supposedly going to dole out, and who doesn't. And under these conditions, under the conditions of an economic breakdown globally, that's fascism as sort of purely distilled as you can get it. But I think there's a deeper element to this. One is, yes, this is, what Nixon did in getting rid of the Apollo program in the early 70s was criminal. And it was insane. But what Obama's doing is worse. I mean, it is the first time in the whole history of NASA, in the whole 50-plus year history, that we've had a space program that manned spaceflight is not really going to be a part of that, is not going to be the focus of that. But at a deeper level, I think this whole thing should be read in the context of what kind of a future is actually a necessary part of present policymaking. That, in other words, the moment that we're in is kind of pregnant with two possibilities, one of which is a kind of an inevitable outcome of what Obama and the Obama administration are doing, which is a dark age, a global dark age. That, I think, LaRouche has made very clear. We've made clear in some of the productions that have come out on the website that there is no way that the world can continue to exist in its present form with 6.7 billion people, with the needs, the material needs, the cultural needs, under a system which is explicitly opposed to human development and human creative development in particular, which is where you get the real exclamation point on this policy. So I'd say that, the present moment is sort of, pregnant with that possibility, or alternatively, it's the possibility that we're fighting for. And it is really got to be something that is visceral for people, that either the possibility of a dark age or the possibility of a renaissance, of a rebuilding and a reconstruction of the world, not just the United States, but the world, that both of those are embedded in the present moment. But for depending on which one we take, which road we take, it's going to take an actual creative leap of the imagination of at least a certain section of the population to have an image of that future. And that future, which we've defined, which LaRouche has defined, is going to be a major part of which is going to be space exploration, the colonization of Mars, the development of the means of getting there, the control over certain forms of power, fusion power, and other scientific principles to be able to accomplish that. That at some level, that has to be a conscious part of the thinking of today's generation and policymaking today. And that's what we're trying to do. And I think when you read the actions of Obama and company in the context of that, what's needed on that front, not just for its own sake, but for the actual further development of the physical economic development of the planet, which, we can get into what the connection is between space exploration and physical economy at a basic level. But with that becomes a necessity and an imperative for mankind, and then you understand it at that level, then you can see what they are doing with this decision is literally killing the future. They're literally trying to eliminate the future as an active governing agency in the world right now.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. In terms of getting an idea of the future by way of the past, do you want to summarize, as you've done in these video features and so forth, what you could call the lessons of the Apollo program? In other words, at large, there's the reductionist side of just saying we got spinoffs and so forth, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to develop that some?
Yeah, I think it's something that anybody who was alive then should be able to go inside themselves and recreate. That there's a species difference, and it's a subjective difference. The objective differences are at least the objective results of the Apollo program, of that kind of a science driver crash program, a national mission. Again, should be relatively obvious. You know, we made major advances in whole areas of technology, and it wasn't just in existing areas of technology. We created new industries. We created new technologies. And we mobilized the, you know, industrial capabilities of the U.S. to carry out the mission. But I think the more important, the more fundamental, and the sort of longer range determining changes were subjective. And there's a species difference between the idea in a population, in a society, that the activity of society and therefore the activity of individuals within that society who have a connection to society at large. The difference between thinking about that activity as directed towards some process of development, of progress towards the future, of improvement, of self-development, of a mission that's going to outlast your own lifetime by its nature, that your life is actually committed less to particular acts, but more to the process by which the meaning of your life is going to be extended by future generations. That's why we have nations, is to give people the opportunity to have that kind of meaning by embarking on these multi-generational projects, which space exploration certainly is, and properly is that's what it represents. You know, you can look back in history for other examples of great projects, great national infrastructure projects, great cathedral building projects, great projects of exploration. That's the essence of society. That's the essence of human identity, social identity. And there's really a kind of an incommensurable difference between having a society in which that's a governing dynamic and having a society that really is what we've inherited the last 40 years, which is the complete opposite, which is a total cultural pessimism, a sense that we can't extend beyond the limits of what we see presently around us in our present conditions, that everything is determined by a context of reduction, of entropy, of a kind of a, you know, regression. And I think anything positive that's going to come out of a national policy is going to have to grow out of that kind of subjective orientation that says, no, the future is something that's real, and it's the reason that we exist as human beings. It's the reason that we do what we do, is to secure that and improve that. And unfortunately, we have kind of a case study in the opposite, where there's really been nothing, with the exception of the space program in the 60s, there's been nothing since Roosevelt died in 1945 that's been of any lasting value at that level in the country. And the reason is because we've lost as a country that sense of progress, and we've not just lost it, you know, by evaporation or something. It's been beaten out of the culture.
Right. Let me interject one thing for our listeners. We have many listeners too by telephone message line during week to week, that on February 27th, when Harley Schlanger will be on the program, we want to take up and that partly what you said on the pessimism side of the idea that resources are fixed, we're all subject to the laws of thermodynamics that says energy is fixed. And we hope to have, Harley Schlanger will have as guests Bruce Director and Phil Rubenstein. But this pessimism has been very sneaky and corrosive. So the subjective shift you're talking about.
And I would like to just, the point that you're making about that it's framed, these kind of social principles are framed as laws. The idea that, of fixed resources, or the idea that intrinsically mankind is, we're just animals by nature. We're just consumers. We're carbon emitters. We're destroying the environment. These things are all postulated as laws, and they're trying to they are given a sense of the authority of science, because you've had a corrupted scientific establishment that's sort of, been co-opted into this. And I think, another aspect of actually having a frontier research program, frontier space exploration program, is the revival of science itself and of a sense of scientific principles, real scientific principle within the population.
Right. Let me ask you something, too, that in the LPAC videos that I've mentioned now a couple of times, From the Moon to Mars, The New Economics, which I want to plug, that we have a transcript of this latest one posted on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website. We in EIR, in the February 19th issue, EIR Online, has a transcript with some illustrations of your half-hour video. If people look at it, they see time and again you use the imagery of the globe, of our planet, Earth, and you see transcontinental land surface corridors proceeding in different directions, up over the far north in the Arctic area or elsewhere, or you see Africa filling out with these. And could you take this up again? I mean, this is also, when you mentioned already, the idea of having deliberate improvement projects on a grand scale. It gets you into thinking about things, deliberately developing entire systems of improvements and changes in our universe, instead of this last 40 years of localities and competition and free trade think.
Yeah. No, I think it's exactly right, is the idea that, number one, people talk a lot about cost. That's the word that's thrown around when people talk about the space program. It costs too much, these are costs that we can't handle, et cetera, et cetera. And people don't know what they're talking about. They just don't. They don't know what a cost is. They couldn't distinguish a cost from an investment. And if we need any proof of that, it's the way those words have been used, the last 30, 40 years in terms of the financial system. And that image of that, the sort of total disconnect between the idea of a physical investment or a physical cost, a physical development, physical profit, anything related to the physical economy, between that and this insane abstract mathematical, financial and monetary measurement is captured in LaRouche's triple curve. So to get inside of what that triple curve is actually representing, we've used the as LaRouche has pointed to as well, we've used the work of Vladimir Vernadsky, in being able to look at a process of growth. In this case, you start with looking at the biosphere as a whole, looking at the Earth as a whole. And you can identify that beyond any particular species, beyond even any particular sort of ecological niche, you have a process which unifies the flow of materials through the entire biosphere, not only the flow of materials through metabolism, the atmosphere, and the concentration over long periods of time of certain minerals, but also the rate of their transformation into more structured materials. The basic one that we have that drives the whole biosphere is the the transformation of solar energy into different forms of chemical and other kinds of energy and other kinds of structure, material structures in the form of plants, etc., on the Earth. So you've got a real process of development, of negentropic development, of something that's producing free energy. It's capable of doing more work than what was required to go into it. And so there you have a useful kind of image of something which you have in a higher form with human development. And what we want to do, what the project that LaRouche has sort of assigned be completed as a programmatic policy, is to look at human development on the scale of not just individual nations, not even the planet as a whole, but the solar system as a whole. That what you're actually acting on, as you said, is a system. There's a systemic feature of human activity. And we know now that we can apply the conceptions that Vernadsky used in his experimental work in the domain of biogeochemistry. But now take that and look at the solar system as a whole as a system, as a field of activity, of human activity, of potential human activity, which is capable of supporting all kinds of new forms of human activity. You know, the one that we have in the video is the fact that to transition to a fusion-based economy, probably the primary source of fuel that we're going to want to use is helium-3. Now, where is helium-3? It's not on the Earth, not in any quantities that would be useful. It's on the Moon. So you already have a case there where the further actual physical development of the human species to a higher, more energy-dense form of power is going to require minimally the expansion, the industrial development and mining of the Moon. And so extend that principle, which now we can map out to, you know, a certain amount of detail, recognize that some of these things won't be done for, you know, for another 50 to 100 years, but then you can take that process and apply it now in a more limited way to what needs to be done on the Earth in terms of the land bridge, in terms of the way that we're going to approach resource development here on Earth in places like Siberia where there's very rich resources but very little population, and use that to overturn all of the existing ideas of economics, of profit, of cost, and so forth, rearrange that and rebuild it based on a real physical conception of physical economic development on the planet as a whole. And those plans, as you know, we've had those on the books for decades now.
Right. Well, I'd like to ask Rick something now, but then return. Well, it's all the same topic, but to more.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
No, that's right. What you said about the you just happened to mention about the development of fusion, and this was one of what you called you could call them the kind of markers of the goals that you have to go to reorient to space. But let's go to Washington, D.C. a minute here, because since February 3rd, since this period, Rick, and maybe even before, you've been crossing paths with some of those directly, like Charles Bolden, who is the I guess he's an administrator of NASA.
Yeah, he's the director.
Yeah.
There.
Go ahead. On putting reality forward that this is intolerable, that this should be shut down.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, I just wanted to say that I think we should change the OMB to OMSOB.
Okay.
Office of Management of SOBs.
Okay.
Just wanted to have that for posterity on the LaRouche show.
Okay. Oh.
No, but I mean, first of all, obviously the guy is just defending, I guess he's trying to be loyal to Obama, which is pretty insane at this point. Most of the people that are sort of recognizing he's falling apart like a Toyota, you know, and they're jumping ship, which is why you have a number of people that aren't running for re-election. You know, this is sort of a phenomenon that's been coming up, and we saw what happened in Massachusetts. But anyways, I mean, it was, you know, I just wanted to, he was addressing a engineering symposium, the symposium for the, I guess, National Association of Engineers. And so I attended the event as a guest. And luckily, I got to ask the first question and, you know, make some opening comments. And yeah, I just sort of pointed out the fact. I mean, he was showing some of the, you know, interesting things about NASA. And, you know, Ouyang went through some of the important things that NASA has contributed, but he didn't seem to mention the fact that Obama plans on shutting down Constellation, which, by the way, a number of congressmen, you know, some of you guys have probably heard about this. A number of congressmen in the House have wrote a letter to Bolden saying that, you know, the attempt by NASA to shut down some of these contracts is illegal. Or they've brought up some of the illegality of attempting to do this, because Congress ultimately does have to approve of what Obama's proposing. But anyway, so I, you know, I was just bringing this up and pointing out that this, you know, what are going to be the real effects of shutting down this the space program, shutting down the Constellation program. And of course, he just responded by trying to defend the Obama's proposal. And he said, you know, this is supposed to help us, you know, uncover things about global warming, which, I don't know, being out here in D.C., I think it's pretty clear that global warming's a hoax, if you ask me. I've been sort of experiencing the Snowmageddon out here.
First-hand testimony.
Anyways, but you know, it was sort of a cop-out, although he did admit that, you know, Constellation was underfunded, and that the decisions coming for the White House, you know, it's not, the decisions aren't based on any kind of scientific ideas or anything like that. It's just, you know, fiscal policies coming from the OMB, you know, and we know Peter Ortog isn't exactly a rocket scientist. But yeah, that's sort of what's been happening. But one thing I just wanted to sort of point out just about this letter, though, and this is something that we were bringing up to some of these congressional staffers that we've met with. You know, the people that signed on to it are sort of the congressmen that are going to be directly affected by the shutdown of Constellation.
In other words, the different states that have the installations, like Alabama, Ohio,
yeah, right.
Florida, Texas. Yeah.
And I think it's sort of important that, you know, it's not fought from the standpoint of, you know, jobs in our district. And, you know, we got to get everyone's got to be on board with this. You know, the nation has to sort of understand, you know, this is an attack on the country. And this is, you know, as Ouyang said, this is an attack on the future, and it's not a partisan issue. This is really something that you know, everyone, regardless of, you know, if they're Republican or Democrat, you know, they have to oppose this, because it isn't just a question of, you know, jobs in our district. But anyways, that was one thing I just wanted to sort of highlight. Sort of make a point of
right. And Rick, because I understand, in fact, the resistance in the limited form that you've been saying is not sufficient has been spreading. There are new statements, right, and there are objections and there are letters, but this isn't going to do it for us, for humanity, on this basis, because it won't succeed and it's not right.
Yeah, and we gotta, yeah, people, that's why people gotta support the LaRouche pack. I guess we can't make enough plugs for the LaRouche Political Action Committee.
That's right. And of course, the national campaigns, I mean, as it happens, the congressional campaigns to unseat Barney Frank, running, you know, the campaign against Nancy Pelosi, Summer Shields, Rachel Brown, and then, but Keisha Rogers right in the district where the Johnson Space Flight Center is.
Oh, yeah, and there was a big intervention made by her campaign on Pete Olson. And, you know, Pete Olson's on the subcommittee, they're constantly holding hearings on this issue, obviously, because, you know, it's a very important aspect of our scientific capability. And, you know, one of the Keisha and someone else, one of our organizers that's campaigning for down in Texas, attended one of his town hall meetings and really challenged them and said, you know, if you're really serious about trying to fight to defend the consolation program, you know, you should be fighting to impeach Obama like Keisha is, you know, and sort of, and of course, most of the people attending that town hall meeting were inspired by our campaigns down there, by Keisha's campaign and the statements that were made there.
Right. Let me throw in for people to visualize. I hear one of the banners in that 22nd district in Texas that the Keisha Rogers campaign has out on the street is a picture of Obama with a Hitler mustache and then a picture of space flight of some type. And it says, cut the mustache. Don't cut the NASA space flight.
Yeah, you know, and also, you know, there's also going to be a rally by some machinist union. Actually, I think it's the IAM, if I'm not mistaken.
In yes.
Titusville, near the Kennedy Space Center. And I think, you know, it was important that, again, to sort of emphasize this, you know, they're not just rallying, you know, to, you know, save workers or something like that. But, you know, the president of that union made the point that, you know, this is important for the nation, you know. But, yeah, it's hopefully we can get more people on board and understanding the implications of this. There's really no – you can't replace there's a certain quality of work that's being done on, you know, designing and developing a manned spacecraft like Ares, or, you know, the space module Orion. And, you know, some of the original scientists that were working on the space program, you know, they have to find a way to transmit sort of the knowledge that they have to future generations, future engineers. And, you know, it's not something they could sort of use like a – they can't just do it through like a textbook or something. You actually have to have engineers working on this science. And so the idea we're going to just shut down Constellation, maybe spend it on climate change or something like that, it's really insane. I mean, there's going to be a lot that's going to be lost, you know, if this were to go through. But anyways, someone – you guys.
Rick, no, just what you just said. Let me. I have here to hand the letter that was put out February 15th by some of the veteran astronauts. Charlie Duke was on the Apollo program. Scott Carpenter on Mercury. Some other people, and they wrote an open letter, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. America," saying there never has been, and likely never will be, another government program that expedites technological innovation as much as the U.S. space program. And they are talking about the manned space program. And they say that, in particular, it's been a source of our nation's strength and character, but an Achilles heel in the form of our country's executive branch threatens a mortal wound. In other words, under the Obama 2011 budget, the U.S. will no longer ferry humans into space, no moon, no Mars. The source of so much of America's inspiration and spirit and the impetus for so much discovery, technology, and imagination is in jeopardy. The demise of America's space program is just another step in the dismantling of our nation. So this gets back again to what you're both saying, that there's no textbook, there's no other way, this is the doing of it is what's going to guarantee the future.
Yeah, right.
And
there's no, and these, I mean, I also just, I really think, like, some of these commercial companies that are supposed to, you know, do the manned space flight.
I hear they've had press conferences in Washington, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I think SpaceX tried to launch some payload. Well, this isn't human flight, but they haven't even succeeded in doing that. I mean, they're way behind. And actually, one of the things Bolden said, you know, in the press conference was that, you know, we're trying to go with the new model. The old model didn't work. And it's like, wait a second. last I checked, the old model was the Apollo program of Kennedy, and we made it way past beyond low Earth orbit. We landed a man on the moon. So it's what old model was he talking about? Because the old model worked effectively, and these commercial companies, I mean, some of them have like 12 employees. I mean, maybe they could run fax machines and some computers with that. But it's insane. It's just obvious that it's an attempt to take down man's space flight. You know, these guys are not going to get, you know, no astronaut is going to get into any of these ships that that are going to be developed. You know, but that's. Those are some of the things I just wanted to highlight.
So you probably see it. I mean, the pretense of the whole thing and the ruse that they're right. Well, let's.
I would just say on that too is, I mean, it is the whole. This is the MO of Al Gore, and Newt Gingrich back in the 80s and 90s on what they called reinventing government, but it's taking down the government. It's the idea that because we live in a new age now. You know, we have to find ways to sort of dismantle sovereign capabilities, and somehow it's going to be replaced by this. Really, it's a myth. It's not. They're not, because as Rick is going through, you know, this doesn't even work on its own terms. But and replace that with some kind of myth of you know, free enterprise. And again, the case in point for free enterprise is the Apollo project. Who carried out the hardware? To a large degree. The design, the testing, and the fabrication, it was private industry. But it was under the supervision and the regulation and the mission directed by NASA, by the government. So, yes, then, of course, you know, that was a time when you actually had private. You had industry as opposed to just private, you know. You didn't just have financial, companies. You had real industry, but it was... You know, that was the sort of machinery that was organized and upgraded and improved through this national mission. So people want to talk about free enterprise and entrepreneurship. You don't have that without a government-directed mission. And so, you know, even in their own terms, it's a lie.
Yeah, especially on the space. Especially in outer space. And if there's some budget overruns for these private companies, I have a hunch AIG is not going to start, you know, increasing their budget so they can land a man on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Or Banco Santander or something like that, which, you know, it's pretty clear that there's no real value, no real economic value anyway in these, you know, financial institutions, and that's something we're exposing right now. But anyways,
right, that gets to the point that now that Ouyang began with, we're at a critical moment. It really is a big lurch towards the dark age hopelessness, or we have a terrific opportunity since it's like the Eurozone blowing out, the British Empire cultivated a structure called the Eurozone that had to do with this an arm into the idea of Brazil being a powerhouse financially for Russia. You know, the whole thing is blowing out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you one thing, Ouyang, where you left off before about you had mentioned fusion as a looking towards that, harnessing fusion power in mm-hmm. passing. But you've been stressing that if you look ahead, there are certain markers of what we can't do but would want to accomplish, or frontiers to understand. If you want to say something about this, I mean, besides fusion power, the question of gravitation and unified field, could you just summarize that?
I mean, I think the case, you really can make a case that it's not just that we might get spin-offs. You know, that's a little bit of a misleading term, because it implies that it's sort of you get side benefits, you know, maybe just because you're putting a lot of money into R&D or something. But I think the fundamental scientific breakthroughs that are going to be baseline, like you said, markers for the next 25, 50 years of human development, they're not going to be done without this space orientation. They're not going to be done without a Moon-Mars project. There's a couple of examples. One is fusion. Fusion is only going to be accomplished to the extent that you have a mission that's driving it forward. You know, something that can actually organize and marshal the resources in a way that's going to you know, break past a threshold level. And it really makes the most sense that you look at fusion research and a Moon Mars program as really two aspects of the same thing, because you're going to need both. You're going to need the power for resource development for taking very low concentrations of minerals, being able to process huge volumes of them to get what you need, say, out of the moon or other bodies. You're going to need it for the kind of propulsion that's necessary for accelerated flight. That begins to take you into a domain also of fundamental breakthroughs in biology. And again, I think you wouldn't be off the mark if you said, we won't find a cure for things like AIDS or cancer without the research implied in this space project. You won't do it. And there's this kind of a simple reason for it, which is when you're dealing with manned space flight in particular, what are you doing? You're sort of taking these functions, even basic things like, circulation. And when you go now into the environment of microgravity, all of a sudden things that are basic, things that we don't have to account for on Earth, you all of a sudden have to account for, but at a basic level. You know, how does circulation work in microgravity? How does bone loss work in microgravity? How do basic things like, you know, your sense of balance and so forth. So you're actually taking the human organism at a fundamental level, and you're having to rebuild the functions that we don't normally have to think about on Earth. And so you get to a more fundamental level of function, of activity, at the level of what are the principles governing biological activity. That's where the deadlock is on coming up with a cure for, say, AIDS or other degenerative diseases virology and things like that. That you have to be able to take your experimental work to those kinds of limits, which bring you to the fundamental questions. And it's only in the environment where you're testing that against the kind of fundamental forces that affect living processes on Earth, namely gravitation, electromagnetism, and increasingly things like cosmic radiation and other kinds of radiation, where you can't fully control these different parameters stuck on Earth. And, I mean, I think there's just hints in this direction already. The fact that we know from the work of guys like Svensmark in Denmark that cosmic radiation plays a key, if not the key, determining role in climate on the Earth. I mean, in combination with other factors, but in cloud formation and therefore climate. That you have these cosmic rays that are zipping around the whole galaxy, and they're affecting very intimately the development of conditions for life and evolution here on the planet. That already takes you into a domain where you say, well, the system that we have to treat, therefore, in terms of our environment, extends implicitly way beyond Earth. It extends throughout the solar system. It extends throughout the galaxy in terms of thinking about the systemic effects on life here. So, yeah, we're going to have spin-offs, but I would say we're not going to have scientific breakthroughs at a fundamental level without putting ourselves in the position to answer the questions that you need to answer if you're going to put someone, you know, on the moon or on Mars. You're going to find a way to get them there alive, keep them there, and reconstruct the total environment that people need to stay alive in space.
Right. And just what you've given some of the really main frontiers there, during the Apollo program period, there was a great deal of optimism and interest in photosynthesis in the sense of controlled agriculture under very controlled conditions of light and radiation and so forth.
Right.
Which then partly went nowhere. What I mean, it's not as if certain things weren't discovered, but in the 40 years of what you both have described as going into the kind of free trade era of competitive, non-systemic downgrade of everything, there was all there's been is a certain kind of cartel private patenting of certain individual seed improvements instead of the whole cross-the-board kind of science that you're describing that we're not going to have unless we resume overall.
Yeah. I mean, even what we have in terms of the benefits of low-dose radiation, you know, that opens up a whole new world where you're looking at the electromagnetic properties of life. You can look at it at the cellular level, and we know, looking at the work, the lineage, the scientific lineage that you can trace backwards from Vernadsky through people like Alexander Gurevich, another Russian biophysicist, back to Pasteur and his work on, and in fact, we're going to have a video coming out, you know, sometime in the next couple of days, if it's not up already, on Pasteur's work, looking at the specific kind of molecular distinctions and dissymmetries that distinguish living from non-living processes. So now we have a way to taking these phenomena, the fact that, you know, there's a lot of cases where you can show benefits of radiation treatment, low-level radiation, you know, completely contrary to the whole myth that all radiation is bad. Well, now you interface that with the fact that the environment, you know, that space is permeated by all kinds of exotic radiation. And we need to know the effects of that, not just for people traveling in space, but to get a better understanding of how those kinds of processes work on Earth for things like photosynthesis, for basic metabolism. And that's another sort of line of research that could explode if you took if you kind of blew the lid off of this whole suppression of that kind of scientific outlook. And it's connected to the political outlook that, you know, well, there's really not much fundamental in the way to discover in science. We've kind of reduced everything down to, you know, chemistry, and so we don't really need to do these kinds of projects. Well, the fact that we don't have answers to basic questions in terms of disease and regulation of disease and control of diseases and things like that, I think shows that that's, you know, you're gonna need a whole new approach to be able to solve these problems.
Right. Well, let me ask you, Rick, when you do, you mentioned you're in Washington, D.C., but mm-hmm. whether there or around the United States or even in your what you hear from fellow activists abroad, do you find one or another aspect of this starts to hit home, whether it's some of the still sentient staffers on Capitol Hill or people on the streets of Washington or some of these engineers or others who come to get together? There are a lot of association meetings in Washington. You described the one addressed by the NASA Administrator Bolden, but do you find some aspect or another of this subjectively is more accessible and you can engage people in it?
Well, I mean, obviously someone that knows the what's going on with, like, developing Ares, mm-hmm. you know, they know how stupid Obama's proposal is.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's sort of clear cut. But I don't know. According to some of our sources abroad in China and Russia, apparently they're really shocked that Obama's trying to go through with this.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of stunned that the United States is sabotaging its own space flight capability. And actually, you know, I think it was 2 days ago, there was some discussion at Hopkins University about Japan, U.S., you know, cooperation in space. And, you know, some of the people there, they got really excited when I proposed the idea that we should try to reemploy the centrifuge that they developed to do, you know, microgravity experiments.
Okay.
And I think a lot of them, you know, they, you know, after talking to them, they are sort of stunned at sort of the direction we're going, you know, because it's a pretty stupid direction. And people who, you know, understand what's going on, I think that's sort of, I think that's the sentiment. You know, now that's the sense I get.
Some mm-hmm. of the meetings that we've had, I know, I mean, Ricky and I have done a couple together, and the sense that I've gotten, and also just talking to other people on this, you know, general topic, is that the fight that really matters is the fight on these basic principles of physical economy. You know, it's what LaRouche writes about virtually, you know, every paper is getting people to understand at a basic level, you know, what the principles of human development are. That's what's at issue.
Yeah.
And it tends to, you know, you sort of can gauge it based on whether or not people are kind of willing to at least have that kind of a discussion, because the blocks, you know, one of the things about what Obama and the whole administration has done, and it's something that we discussed in you know, doing this video project, is that they've everything they've done has been oriented around eliminating even any kind of rational deliberation about the future. They're taking away the idea of the future as even a conception that people are able to think about, because they everything is framed in terms of crisis management. Everything's framed in terms of the momentary conditions as we perceive them, and how we're going to react to those momentary conditions based on the ingrained, you know, experience and kind of behaviorist conditioning that's been ingrained in people. And so, you know, so you put out these arguments, well, budget is limited, and, you know, the rules say when we have a budget crisis, we have to cut, and we have to cut because we need fiscal responsibility, and you begin to get these circular terms. But the idea is to set the terms of the debate in such a way that you can't even discuss what a conception is of the future that we should be driving towards. What future state should we be at? Well, that's not even part of the discussion. You're reducing people to the level of this, which is why, you know, we've hit on the behaviorist element in this administration. They don't want people thinking about that. And I've found, you know, to the degree that you can, that the terms of the discussion are at least, you know, oriented around, well, what should we be doing? Things, people get it. People can get it.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's safe to say that if some of these financial institutions are falling apart, that's not necessarily a crisis. It might actually just be a blessing for us. Anyway, just to point that out.
Right, it underscores. Well, and Ouyang, I, apropos of what you're saying, if the person you're speaking with, if people you're reaching are willing to give thought to this or have a discussion about the future, I presume that's why you, in the video features that you've done and that you may have in the works, you often pick and choose quotes from the past. Alexander Hamilton, David Lilienthal, the head of the Tennessee Valley Authority. I guess for this reason, of those looking ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this, you know, that's how we used to do things. That's how people thought. That was what you had with Roosevelt. That's what Kennedy, you know, projected. And so it is a pretty stark measure of how far we've degenerated, that you know, the president of the United States is trying to pull down the last kind of, you know, the last area, which represents an actual capability for progress, for that kind of fundamental progress, and that people put up with it. That's the real thing. I mean, we know what Obama is. We've profiled that. We know what kind of creature we're dealing with, what kind of creature this administration represents. But the fact that people fall for it and they're not willing to say the obvious. And I think what LaRouche did with this impeachment drive is saying the obvious.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that what Senator Bill Nelson was saying, that maybe he can, you know, compromise with Obama. I mean, that's just really stupid. I mean, it's just wanted to.
Well,
we got to put a big fight and, yeah, go so far as to try to get Obama to step down or, you know, get rid of him.
Right. I think, Rick, your point is all over the place, too. I think that Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, where there's the John Glenn Space Center, said that, well, whatever happens, we'll be sure that the Glenn Center's taken care of. I think he said that, implying the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. No, you can't compromise with this. I mean, and as Ouyang sort of, and as we've gone through, you know, I mean this is sort of a process that's been occurring for quite some time, and the idea that, you know, we're still going to tolerate some of this, but go figure, you know, some of these congressmen. You know, they are congressmen. They haven't figured it out. So, but we'll fight. And some of the better people, you know, a better part of them is going to come out, you know, to fight against this. Because, like I was saying earlier, this isn't an issue about, you know, ideology or something like that. You know,
right?
The nation comes first.
And let me remind people again. I mentioned about the videos that you can find on LaRouchePAC.com because Ouyang Tang is involved in making those. And a couple more for people, naturally you can browse and look yourself. But it happened that February 3rd, a feature video called The Destruction of NASA was put out by LaRouche Political Action Committee. Ouyang may want to say something about that. I mean, even before the Obama announcement saying we're going to kill it all together, practically. And also on the whole history of the 20th century and this phase we're in of the history of mankind, there is the story of the German space pioneers, and that was put out last September. And all of this is available now for the kind of mobilization that we're going to have to prevent this destruction. This is the line drawn, and it's got to be prevented. So I also recommend everyone, I have to make a pitch on the EIR itself. You know, you can call 800-278-3135, but those of you listening directly are aware of LaRouchePub.com. But now's the time to do more than you ever thought you would. But let me ask you, Ouyang, are you giving special attention to what you could call the kind of education process? You mentioned the Pasteur work that's going to be coming along. Are you working on beyond that still more?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we're following up now is putting together, looking at the research that's been done related to the phenomenon of cosmic rays. And electromagnetic radiation in general, and specifically its interaction with living processes, which gets at, I mean, it gets at a couple of things that Vernadsky outlined as generalizations, that you have a fundamental, he called it a material energetic distinction between living and non-living. He also identified a similar, an analogous distinction between living and cognitive, that with human reason you have a kind of a principle manifesting itself at a higher level than what you see in the living. You know, that is maybe one of the simplest statements you can say about physical economy, one of the simplest ways to principles that you can, you know, say about physical economy, which is that it represents the domain of human reason as it transforms the universe around it. So we're looking at, you know, one of the things that's going to be part of making this, bringing this picture together, and really showing that what you have in physical processes, they have to be understood from the standpoint of creative development. That our experience of creative development, as individuals and as society develops through creative thought.
And that's the best kind of point to leave it on, but okay. I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Well, just that's the way you have to approach all of these sciences. So I think that brings it to a point, you know.
That's terrific. And we'll stay tuned for that. And so I'll just thank you, Ouyang Teng and Rick Lopez of the LaRouche Youth Movement, LaRouche Political Action Committee, and conclude the February 20th, 2010 LaRouche Show. This is Marcia Mary Baker signing off. Thank you all.